From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of September, USDA Grain Stocks Report Day. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's number and the reaction in Chicago with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And then we'll be joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible to discuss the weather forecast here in the United States for the harvest season. He'll look into South America, and we might even ask him a little bit about this winter and have a discussion about next year as well, at least some thoughts about next year. We'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Do find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Not only will you find the Closing Market Report there, but you'll also find our Commodity Week program. For those of you who can stay with us on our home station, you'll hear that program today. Otherwise, it's up online right now at willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn settled at $6.77.5, up 8 cents for the day. The March 8 higher at $6.84, and the May corn up 7 at $6.84.5. November beans down 46 cents at $13.64¾ a bushel. January 13.75.5, 45 lower. And March soybeans at $13.83¼, down 41.5 cents. The bean meal, $5.90 lower. The bean oil down $2.13. Soft red winter wheat, 25¼ higher at $9.25½ in the December contract. Hard red December up 24¾, settled at $9.91½ a bushel. Live cattle futures at $147 and a nickel, 72½ cents lower. November down $3.20 at $174.62½ for the feeder cattle, and lean hogs at $76.22½, up 50 cents on the day. The crude oil at $79.57 a barrel, down $1.67. U.S. Harbor diesel fuel at $3.22.09. That's heating oil, down 6½ cents, and natural gas down 5¾ cents today at $6.82¼. Mike Zuzlow now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, to discuss the marketplace for the day after the USDA report showed a couple of numbers, I think, Mike, that farmers will be really interested in. I'm wondering how you viewed the grain stocks numbers as they were released. It looks like I was bearish to the soybean market. That's what the market said today, and bullish to the corn market, or at least friendly. How'd you see it?
I think two things, Todd. The USDA gave us some pretty original numbers, numbers that we probably weren't expecting at all in the corn and beans. I think in the wheat market, there was only one way to get that low of a stocks number, and production number was they did it. And I really felt like back in June when they raised the wheat yield up for 22, it was going in the wrong direction given the drought. And so they pulled that back, and they did that, I think, in the right direction this time. So wheat remained our leader to the upside because it doesn't have harvest pressure. It's still got the dollar working against it at times, but it also has a major hard red wheat belt, showed that again this week in the drought monitor. The European Commission did raise the European wheat crop today by 1 million tons, but we still have a major drought in Argentina as well. So net-net, I think wheat still is the leader to the upside, especially when you factor in the commitment of traders report as of late. For corn and beans, it was easy to see how USDA got the reduction in production for corn down 41 million bushels. They also came in and raised production in soybeans by 30 million bushels. And that is really the heart and soul of how the trade and their expectations of a lower stocks report number versus last year at this time, I think, is the genesis of it, because we actually consumed 185 million more bushels in beans than we did in 2021. So the production increase, I think, was the big thing that really turned the market's heads. And, you know, we're now looking at revising 2021-22 carryover levels, and we're going to add about 73 million bushels to beans for this year, keeping everything else the same. So we're at almost 275 million bushels. That explains why we were down, I think, 45 cents roughly in the Nova beans today. In the corn, however, by them taking down the production a little bit, and I think it was livestock feed and disappearance that really came in and saved us for the corn number, we're going to be down about 150 million bushels. And that takes us down close to a billion bushel carryover, or just under 1.1 billion in the corn for this coming year. And so I think the trade traded those numbers.
You say that wheat was the lead, or is the lead at the moment. Can the grains, wheat, corn, manage to pull soybeans along with it and stem the tide going lower, if that's really what's happening?
Yeah, excellent question. That's exactly what I'm looking at right now. And I think the answer is yes, because our bean corn ratio got down to 2.01 today on the close. 2.0 is pretty strong support, and around 1.95 is rock solid support, technically speaking. And so I think, yes, if the wheat and the corn want to go higher, it will put a low in place for the beans and stop the bucket from leaking so much. And I think that's the key here, because I continue to hear, for the most part, really strong corn and bean yields. And with the issues now with low river levels starting to hit us in the basis because of barges getting stuck in Cairo, and freight rates going skyrocketing from what I'm hearing in certain parts, it is going against the water and going against the current to take this market higher, I think, this fall, now that we've had such a bullish reaction in the wheat and especially in the corn. I think the wheat can still go higher on its own fundamentals, but I think corn and beans will fight more fundamental friction, I guess.
Okay, so I have a question then related to all of this. If corn and wheat can manage to pull or move higher through the fall season, I don't know whether you told me really that might be the case or not, and they managed to stem the tide based on the corn-soy ratio for soybeans going lower, will the whole thing trend higher through the harvest season, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm going to try and be as plain spoken, because I sense that I was not as plain spoken as I needed to be a minute ago. What I'm thinking is the wheat, because the wheat corn spread is now at $2.50, roughly, soft red wheat minus corn. As you get higher and higher, you do want to pull the corn higher. But I think at that point, the wheat is going to have to fight the negativity of supply and the continued weak demand on the export front with the corn. And so I think we can go higher, but for maybe another 4 or 5 days. I think my mindset, we're within about 50 cents of being at a fair value level in the wheat, knowing what I know right now. And if that's the case, then I'm still buying puts and I'm still going to scale up in corn and beans, utilizing any rallies at this point.
This is all for the crop that's being harvested at this point for corn and soybeans.
That's exactly right.
What do we do about next year? Anything?
I don't think I am in a position to do anything in the corn, especially. I obviously wish I would have gotten some 23 sales done in the beans at $14, but that's something that's on the plate for the month of October to see if we can't get a post-harvest rally and get back closer to that level, as opposed to making a best sale here at this point. I'm going to concentrate more on 22, because there's still a lot of 22 sales to be made, I think, and a lot of farmers and ledgers that they're working right now.
Opportunities to come in later October and November, possibly December, for sales for soybeans in that case?
I think so. I mean, I think that the thing that we have to continue to watch is the drought scenario in the wheat market. And obviously, Argentina has got a drought going on in it, and that could spill over from the wheat into the row crops. We know now that they're slowing down on their corn planting pace. That adds an added element later down the road if the drought continues, of additional short covering. And I do think the beans can catch some of that.
In South America, how much pressure comes into the marketplace as they begin to plant?
I continue to think that, again, because the South Americans are really going to swing for the fences in new crop soybean production, and China is had their growth lowered again this week by the World Bank and the OECD, we're going to fight supply and demand if we don't keep the weather on our side. And so really got to be more defensive in the soybean hedges than we have been the last 3 years. In the corn, the European Commission lowered the corn estimate dramatically for a third time a week over there. And so between the slow planting of wheat the slow harvesting of corn in the Baltic, the problems in the European Union, and then what we have been able to do in terms of trimming our yields here. I don't think South America is going to be as big a competitor in the corn market, at least between now and January, especially if the current weather patterns hold up.
I'd like to take up some of the demand or consumption issues with you as well. Ethanol, the U.S. dollar, weakness in the United States, China, in the economy, and, of course, the war in Ukraine. How do all of those play in your mind and livestock as well?
Yeah, that's a great question to ask because it falls into the category of why I'm hedging rallies and why I'm buying a lot of puts during a rally potential here in this harvest. It's not just all about supply. I continue to think that the fourth quarter is going to be pretty tough on the demand side, whether you're talking about investment demand or real demand, and even including the meat side of the equation. I mean, we saw really terrific export sales in pork and beef and soybeans this week, but I'm skeptical that that's going to continue to stay that way because of how quickly I think China, the Europeans, and even our economy, we've now had two quarters in a row of negative growth. I do think this is going to catch up very soon to the consumer, and we're going to feel it more in the fourth quarter. It's not all about supply and the harvest pressure. I think there's a serious element of demand there too, Todd, that we have to be watchful of and protective of it. I mean, we're talking about hitting almost $7 in corn today. And so I think we really do have to put that in perspective. No matter how bullish the wheat could become, I think we do want to take care of the 22 crop year here.
And then define ethanol for me, not definition, but how good or strong demand seems for you and the livestock sector as well.
Yeah, ethanol demand is pretty simple. Watch a supply chart, watch the stocks chart, and we're back to pandemic levels as far as production. That's not going to do us any good, especially if gasoline prices are not declining rapidly so that you'd pick up more of the ethanol blends in your gas pumps and pumping more into your tanks. So I'm more negative on the ethanol blending side. Our dry season is over as well. As far as livestock, I think the market has done a good job in hogs and in cattle and feeders taking out premium. The funds, I wouldn't be surprised to see them closer to being maybe even net short or close to net short in some of these complexes by the time we get to the first, second week of October. And they've been very, very long. So I think they're nervous about the equities and the consumption side. They've been dealing with that. And so I think it's a pretty clean market overall in the cattle market.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com. Now joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible to take a look at the weather forecast. Let's start with Ian. Eric, oh, by the way, thank you for being here today, too. Tell me about that storm.
Yeah, it's been a long week for a lot of us here in the United States and certainly for the people that had to endure, Ian. But in terms of forecasting a hurricane, this one presented a lot of challenges. You know, as it went across Florida earlier in this week, we saw some places picking up almost 2 feet of rain, excuse me. It was 1 mile an hour short of being a Category 5 strength hurricane. And then not very well forecast was its emergence in the Atlantic. And now it's targeting later on today a direct hit on South Carolina as a Cat 1. Now, the reason why this is so important to ag is that we've got several crops in the Carolinas that are, you know, coming to a finish. So they do a lot of double cropping on wheat with corn and soybeans, and that those corn and beans need more time to finish, and some heavy rains could really affect this. Also, peanuts. There's a lot of peanuts and cotton grown there as well. And given how decimated the cotton crop was in Texas this year, that cotton, they need that cotton in order to kind of keep up the supply across the U.S. So Ian, as a Cat 1, it's going to go into South Carolina and eventually put down 3 to 5 inches of rain across most of North Carolina and Virginia. And while that's all happening, you know, here we are sitting on the back side of this with just lots of clear skies.
Yes, they were fantastic. I was in the field this week helping my brothers harvest, and they would like to have some dry weather to continue to bring corn and soybeans in over the next week. Will you be able to supply that across the Midwest?
Well, Well, my question for you, Todd, is will you be able to supply it? Because I saw a video of you with a big pile of corn sitting in the field. Someone was not driving the grain cart very well. So anyway, we'll leave that be. But so what we've got right now is we've got more time. We've got more time for good harvest weather. In fact, we're going to get some windier days coming up, which is going to help with dry down. And there's a system that's way off to our west. It's in Montana and Wyoming, but it's going to really struggle to get moisture coming our way. So we could spend another 7+ days without much precipitation at all. Now, the thing is that we in central Illinois have dodged a frost as of late, but there's been a frost in northern Illinois, northern Indiana, parts of Iowa, Wisconsin. And I'm concerned about cooler weather about 1 week from now. So next Friday morning, next Thursday morning, we could see some overnight lows that are once again kind of knocking on that door of 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And just so you know, that's still about 10 days earlier than normal if there is a frost a week from today. But it seems as though through the beginning of October, we could continue to see wide open harvest windows for a lot of folks with very little interruption.
You know, in my defense, the elevator left the dump on the semi open. I should have seen it. Okay, so South American weather, what are conditions like there?
Well, the latest forecast that just came out confirmed a lot of issues that we had been suspecting happening in Argentina. So there's been some pretty substantial late winter and spring drought concerns there. And the issue is primarily that it's going to be very difficult to establish a crop given how terrible the soil moisture is. Some places have just completely flatlined on precipitation. So like Buenos Aires and Cordoba, Santa Fe, these are big areas. I mean, those are like the Champagne counties of Argentina that I just mentioned. And as a result, there's going to be some concern across Argentina. But who's not concerned is Brazil. The La Nina, which continues to strengthen right now, is really helped with the jet stream pattern across Argentina, drying things out, but allowing for better rains with the monsoonal interaction in Brazil. So we see above normal rainfall from now through mid-November, which means that the planting progress, which is already ahead of normal, will continue. So that opens up the crop calendar in a big way.
You said November. That reminds me winter is not very far away in the northern hemisphere. Do you have any indication of what this might be like for us?
I do. I think that we will see the front half of winter being dominated by La Nina, and then I think it is going to fade very quickly after that, meaning that we'll have these secondary sub-seasonal factors taking over. And one of the ones that I am particularly keen on right now is the polar vortex. Now, I know probably some people listening just let out a huge sigh, but last year the polar vortex was strong, and we just limited the deep, sustained cold. Well, the polar vortex sets up right about now, and then it builds up until we have to start watching it in December. It's building up in a very slow way right now, so that makes me worried that it might be weak. So what I'm trying to tell you is, Todd, I don't like the fact that somewhere in the Northern Hemisphere, be it here or Europe or Russia, if that polar vortex is weak, those locations could really get hit with some, you know, more sustained, well below normal temperatures. And the Northern Hemisphere, given energy, all the things going on with it right now, doesn't need this. A mild winter would be much, much better, but you only get those if a strong El Nino is in place.
Now, one other question. I know that farmers will be reaching back in their mind, especially with the dry conditions in the western part of the United States into the Corn Belt, and thinking about 1988 after a dry 1987 in that western part of the U.S. What do you think?
Well, I don't see that as an analog at this point because unlike that particular time period where La Nina just continued to rage all the way through 1988, I think we're going to break away from it. So the key thing to watch this fall and winter is if you hear me every Friday with you start saying the word subtropical when I'm talking about the jet stream. If the subtropical part of the jet stream starts to show up and gets active, we will see drought area across the whole of the United States shrink pretty quickly. So there's plenty of things for us to keep talking about on Fridays. There's never a shortage when it comes to weather and markets, right?
I'm just going to make sure that you say subtropical all the time. No, I don't like droughts. Hey, thank you.
I don't either. You bet, Todd.
I appreciate it. You have a good weekend. That is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. And that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon. If you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program program. Otherwise, it's up online right now at willag.org, and many of these stations will carry it over the weekend. WILLAG.org, not only the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, but information from the Ag Economist, Animal Scientist, and University of Illinois Crop Scientist as well, right there at WILLAG.org. Commodity Week is next.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Logan Kimmel of Roach Ag Marketing, Jerry Golke of the Golke Group, and Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org, WILLAG.org. You can just click and play from the website or search out Commodity Week in your favorite podcast applications in places like Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, and so many more. Logan Kimmel, let's begin with you. Can you give me your immediate reaction after you saw the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture, those grain stocks figures that changed things somewhat today?
Immediate reaction was on the friendly side for corn and wheat, and we did witness and then still have seen a bearish reaction to the bean numbers. I think with the fund length in the soybeans and a bearish number, that is caused the drawdown in the selling pressure on the soybeans. But first initial reaction and half hour into it is friendly on the corn side, pushing back up 15 right now, and the beans are under some selling pressure with those numbers.
Given these numbers, as you look into October towards the WASDE figure, what kind of things do you expect to change?
Well, I think on the next report, there will be a change to yield and possibly demand. But what we've seen on the corn with the numbers we know today, if nothing else changes on the report, that we do have a very tight number on ending stocks for corn, and I think that's being priced in as we speak. I think the soybean number surprised a little bit, higher than what the trade was guessing, but ultimately I think it should hold in here, and that number is still awfully tight in the grand scheme of things as well. So I would expect a change drawdown in the yield. And maybe a little bit of a cut on the demand side on the next report.
What have you been telling producers this week or hearing from them, either one, as it relates to the yield that they're harvesting for both corn and soybeans this year?
I think right now, or this past week, even with today's move, what we've seen is it is harvest time. And December corn so far has not been able this month to poke through the $7 level. And I do believe there's a lot still edge sell orders for new crop, and I think that makes sense.
Logan Kimmel is with Roach Ag Marketing. We'll hear more from him along with Jerry Golke and Bill Biederman in just a moment when Commodity Week continues.